Okay, this morning we'll be in chapter 13 of Romans. I'll begin by reading and we'll go from there. Only 14 verses, so it shouldn't be a long one, but there's a lot of discussion in here. Verse 1, it says, "Let every soul be subject to the higher powers, for there is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. Whosoever therefore that resists the power resists the ordinance of God, and they that resist shall receive to themselves damnation. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to evil. Wilt thou then not be afraid of the power? Do that which is good, and you shall have praise of the same. For he is the minister of God to thee for good. But if you do that which is evil, be afraid, for he bears not the sword in vain. For he is the minister of God, a revenger to execute wrath upon him that does evil. Wherefore, you must needs be subject, not only for wrath, but also for conscience' sake. For this cause pay ye tribute also, for they are God's ministers attending continually upon this very thing. Render therefore to all their dues, tribute to whom tribute is due, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor. Owe no man anything but to love one another, for he that loves one another has fulfilled the law. For this thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not bear false witness, thou shalt not covet. And if there is any other commandment, it is briefly comprehended in this saying, namely, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. Love works no ill to his neighbor, therefore love is the fulfilling of the law. And that knowing the time that now is, let me say it again, and that knowing the time that now it is high time to wake out of our sleep, for now is our salvation nearer than when we believed. The night is far spent, the day is at hand. Let us therefore cast off the works of darkness, and let us put on the armor of light. Let us walk honestly as in the day, not in rioting and drunkenness, not in chambering and wantonness, not in strife and in envying. But put ye on the Lord Jesus Christ, and make not provision for the flesh to fulfill the lusts thereof." Seems real simple, real basic, but I think there's a whole lot here we're overlooking. It can be a tongue twister. This first verse, I'd like you to look at it. And really look at it just for a second. And some of you, give me some feedback on what it says. Let every soul be subject to the higher powers. That part right there. Tell me something.
Mine says governing authorities.
Beg your pardon?
Mine says governing authorities.
Okay.
That would be your human side to me.
Okay.
But my spirit has no authority except for God. And all those others.
You're on the right vein. You're on the right vein.
You're subject to what God's in control anyway, so you've just been subject to God.
And there's where I'm looking at.
Not
Lois, anything?
No. The subject is the
karma. See. The soul is a combination of something, spirit and flesh. So the man of duality, which we all have been people of duality, that's where we were created, part man, part flesh, okay? But it says, let every soul be subject. And this word subject has a deeper meaning than just being underneath somebody, okay? But it speaks of a voluntary attitude of giving in cooperation, assuming responsibility and carrying the burdens. So it's a whole nature change, not just saying, okay, I'll bow to you. It's the nature change to where you bow to all. Jesus became a subject and a servant of all, didn't he? Because his nature was that of the Father. If our nature, and that's what he came for, to show us that the very nature that Jesus walked in was the nature of our Father. Didn't Jesus say, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father? Mm-hmm. We've seen the same character, the same nature, the same actions that would come from God himself. And it actually was God coming out of him. And just like your nature is exactly the same as Jesus' nature, but the problem is we've been hoodwinked into believing we're not there. And if we do something, we can work our way to become something good.
We already are.
We were made. When God created man, he said, when he finished in Genesis 1:31, he said, it's very good. It wasn't bad, it wasn't evil, but we, in our own concepts, built our own desires, and man wants to desire, that thing about wanting to be God, you know, over people, is not a godly thing. God didn't say, do this or else, do this or I'll throw you in hell. He's loving you. We love him because he what? He first loved us. That love draws us in. It's not fear and intimidation and condemnation and guilt that brings us to God. If we go to, and most people go to church because of condemnation, fear, and guilt, but that's not the right reason. The reason to go to God is because you sense his love and you go to him freely with that attitude of giving and cooperation and responsibility, you know, and carrying of the burden. It's time for me to do something. Not because I've been threatened, but because I realize it's my time.
I'd like to be the man on the street and interview people and ask them, why do you go to church?
Yeah. I had a sister-in-law one time that got real angry with me when I said, and I was just making an over-the-counter statement, you know, just a generic statement. Most people go to church because they're afraid of going to hell. Man, she took offense to it right away. And I said, what are you upset about? I didn't say anything about you. And she said, well, that's not any, I don't know anybody that goes to church because they're afraid of going to hell. Really? There must not be very many in your church, you know, is all I could think. But I didn't say anything because I knew she was already offended. So nothing I could have said could have changed the situation. So just let it go.
It sounds like she was insecure in that in herself.
Oh, absolutely insecure. And she took it personal, and I wasn't even talking to her personal, but she just, you know, she's out defending her Catholicism or whatever, you know, that's all. It don't make any difference. But, you know, the majority of people are there because of that. If you take away the concept of hell, and why do you think the Catholic Church came up with the concept of hell? To get people in church and keep them in there to get their money. You do away with that concept, that church is empty.
Yeah.
See? With the concept of hell, you see how many comes to church, you know.
They're like, well,
they scare them in. That's right. It's all about fear. And since the book says God has not given us a spirit of fear, then who give it to us?
Yeah.
The church. Oh, well. Anyway, I just wanted you to see in that first thing that it's not about being subject to governmental powers, okay? But it's being subject to what's within you. The higher power is within you, isn't it? Doesn't God dwell within you?
Your love child.
See, there you go. God's inside of you, so you've got to be subject to that power that lives within you, not within the powers out here. Although God is in control of those things also. You know, he does things out there. But here's where it's at inside. If I'm subject to what's in here, if I'm not subject to what's in here, I'm not going to be subject to anything external. It's got to be here first, to be sincere.
Doesn't it take every thought captive to the obedience of Christ? Doesn't that feel right there?
Sure it does. Sure it does. Saying it a little differently, but same thought process. Same thought process. Same intent.
I mean, that one word is basic. That one word, little bit right there, is basically saying that. When you expand it out, it's saying it.
Same thing. Absolutely. So if we find out that we got to learn to be subjected to the power that's in us, not external but internal, because God is an internal God. And we'll go on with the first verse. It says, because there is no power, instead of but it should be except from God, of God or from God. And the powers that be, they are not ordained, but they are assigned by God. God assigns those powers. Everyone that's in every crooked lawyer, judge, politician, all these people, they're there for a reason to bring about his plans and his purposes. And everything that has life in this whole universe has positive and negative, doesn't it? See, so everything that God does has that negative in it as well as positive. Sometimes we wonder why so many negatives, but...
I just made me think of
Yeah.
Neutrons and morons.
That goes with it. Okay. Verse 2, it should say, so whosoever, the ones therefore resisting or opposing, see, opposing the power, opposes the arrangement, not the ordinance, but the arrangement of God. If I resist the power in me to do something, and I'm talking about the God in me and the God in you, if we resist that, you know, or oppose that, we are opposing the arrangement that God has set up in our lives. Isn't that correct?
No.
We're opposing what God has arranged for our life. And they that, or the ones that oppose, shall receive. Now this word receive is kind of amazing because it's not the correct word. It's translated that a lot, but if you look at that word, it's a Greek word lambano, which means to take instead of receive.
Yeah, the
aerial. Yeah. See, it's to take instead of receive. So it's got the wrong connotation there. So it says, you take to yourselves judgment. So now, this goes along with what I've said before in the past. If God says, don't touch this cup sitting here on this table, it'll burn your hands. If I touch it, does God punish me for touching it, or am I stupid enough to touch it when it's hot and will burn me?
You're reaping what?
So I'm taking it to myself. I'm taking judgment to myself. God's not judging anybody. Judgment was done at the cross. It's finished. So when this word comes to the word take instead of receive, makes a lot of difference. Receiving means you got it coming to you and God's going to punish you. That's what everybody thinks. God's not into punishing. If he was into punishing, he would have started with Adam. And he didn't. We could go there and spend all day, but I won't. Verse 3. Because rulers are not a terror to good works. If you're doing what you're supposed to, you shouldn't have to worry about anything, should you? Does that mean nothing will ever happen to you?
No.
Something about the sun shining on the good and the evil?
Rain
on the just and the unjust? Everybody's going to get a shot, see? So don't think just because something happens you've been bad. But you should have the mindset to understand that bad things happen to good people that's doing good things.
Yeah.
And good things happen to bad people that do bad things.
It's all about how you respond.
How's your perception of it?
Mm-hmm.
What's your mindset to this? Can I understand that everything that's happened in my life made me who I am? Lois and I were just talking yesterday about, you know, our children and saying, you know, the kids are going through hard things and we hate to see them, but we can't stop it. No one stopped it in our lives and it made us who we are. And the things, if we shelter them from everything, it's kind of like today, all these drugs they give people, like the antibiotics. You take the antibiotics to keep them from being sick because you don't want them to be sick, but you're actually hurting them in a point when you just keep feeding them antibiotics. They have no immune system. And it's the same thing in life. If we protect our children beyond the point we should, we're actually making them weaker and weaker and weaker instead of making them stronger and stronger, what the intent of the whole situation is. See, we got to be able to have a little bit of discernment and realize, hey, this isn't what's right. We need to let our children experience things, and it might hurt a little bit once in a while, but hopefully not unto death, you know. Hopefully it's just going to straighten them out and get them looking in the right direction. That's what it's meant to do. We had to go through it. Our parents had to go through it. Our grandparents with it. All the generation before us went through the same thing. So who are we to think we got a better idea? We'll just alleviate that out of our lives, our children's lives. That's why the world today is such a mess. Everybody's got smarter than what God has. God already put a plan in motion, and they've tried to alter it. Look what it's turned into.
overcome
evil with good. No.
So is that what God is, our big daddy or big father?
He's right there.
As the kids, as his children, we have to overcome it in the world, not...
Jesus said, protect them in the world, don't take them out of the world.
Yeah, I couldn't...
John 17.
Yeah, I couldn't
That's all right.
Bring it back.
It's okay. I have those issues once in a while myself. Okay. Okay, I left off there in 3, right? Wilt thou then, and be not afraid of the power? Will you not be then afraid of the power? It should say, and do you then desire to not be afraid of the power? See? If you desire to not be afraid of the power, do that which is good, and you shall have praise from the same. Okay? From the same what? From the rulers or the powers, or that power in you. You'll have praise from the power in you. See, because the praise from the power within you, which is God, is the only praise you really need anyway, isn't it? That external praise really is a temporal, vain thing. But what's inside of you, when God Himself praises you, that's the ultimate.
It's also how your attitude is in that also.
Well, sure, it's the whole thing. It's all about attitude. You know, in that humble, giving, accepting responsibility and assuming the cooperation and assuming and carrying the burdens. When that all comes in, when you humble yourself in the sight of God, you know what? You have no issue with anything then.
He knows you're not trying to be.
You're not trying to be anything. You are. See, you're not trying. You just are. People that are trying to be good, trying to do good, and you hear people say, I'm trying to do good. I'm trying to be good. That's not the issue. Just be who you are. And if you're trying, you're still building bricks for Pharaoh. And if you're being, guess what? Now you're in the kingdom. Now you're doing the right way. Just do what's nature. Nature tells you in yourself what's right and wrong. You know what it is. That's why we don't need churches running around telling everybody every process of their life what to do and what not to do. There's churches running around writing books telling people how they can have intimate relations with their wife and their husband in certain positions. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Right here, close, not too far away. Yeah. I'm serious. Yeah, they should have their nose in their own rear end. That's what they ought to do, because they don't smell good to start with.
I'll say it nice.
I know. But I mean, that's the kind of things they do. They try to totally control you. You know, it's sick, but that's what they try to do.
I'm doing it right. Let me show you
how. Yeah, there you go. Okay. Verse 4. Because He, or the power, that power. Now we can also realize that there is a natural side to this, don't we? Mm-hmm. There's a natural side. The natural comes first, and that teaches you about the spiritual, as Paul said in Corinthians. But He's the minister or the servant of God to you for good. But if you do that which is evil, be afraid, for He bears not the sword in vain or without reason. What should say, because He is the servant of God and avenger to execute wrath upon him that does evil. Wherefore, you must needs be subject, or it is necessary to have that voluntary attitude of giving and assuming responsibility and carrying the burden. It's necessary to have that. If we have that, the battle is over. Okay? The battle's over. To have this voluntary attitude of giving, assuming responsibility, and carrying of the burden, doesn't that speak of true humility? If you are truly humble, do you think the rest of the journey is going to be that difficult? See, as long as we're still fighting the battle with pride and vanity and arrogance and all these other things, the pride of life and all this stuff that we have, as long as we're fighting that, can we truly be humble? Once we are truly walking in humility, the humility of God, what kind of a battle could there be?
If you're still fighting, you're not humble.
That's what I'm saying. If you're fighting these things, you're not in God's humility. If you're humble, who did Jesus fight with? See? And that's the whole point. If we can see that's the battle within ourselves, and if we are subject to that higher power, you know, with that nature, that voluntary nature, an attitude of giving, assuming the responsibility and carrying of the burdens, if we have that, what else could there be? What else could be a battle for us?
Yeah.
Nothing. Nothing else. That's so important to know that we got to give up this fighting to be right. And you know, in the church world, probably is worse than any place in the world about being right. The church wants to be right instead of knowing of the truth. If we know the truth, do we have to worry about anything else? No, you, what you have to learn to do is just because you see something, does that mean someone else sees it?
No. Well, you got to remember, do you always have to be right or to be kind? And just choose to be kind. And
let them be wrong.
It's their time.
I've said this for a while. They have a right to their own ridiculous opinion.
Well,
see, it's okay.
If you try to force something on someone else,
they're not going to.
And they're going to pull up a wall and they're never going to hear what you have to say.
But see, they want to be right. And it's more important about being right than knowing the truth. If you know the truth, truth is God, right?
Don't you think there's a fear in that too, though?
Sure, it's a fear of being wrong,
right.
and their insecurity along with that, which is that fear, that insecurity of being wrong. They've got their whole life vested on the doctrines that some man or some religion has taught them, rather than hearing from the power within themselves.
And they've never checked it out.
No. If you pull that brick out of the foundation that they're standing on, they're afraid they're going to collapse.
Right.
So they'll fight you tooth and nail over it.
Afraid of being exposed and shown to be naked.
I don't think it's about just about being exposed, Lloyd. It's about being made a fool of.
Nobody wants to know that
they're wrong.
Everything they believed is untrue.
Right, and that's the point. Nobody wants to say, and it's very difficult to say, you know, I made a mistake, let's make it right. But very few people can say those words. Honestly say, you know, hey, I blew it. I've had to come in this room before and say, you know, I ministered something and I was wrong. And I've got a better view of it now. Let me show you what I found. I had people tell me, you couldn't be wrong. Hello? Hello? Yeah. Well, and wasn't Jesus vulnerable? Wasn't all the apostles, weren't they? They were vulnerable people.
That's what I meant. Like, they're showing that they're exposed, that they're vulnerable, that they're not all they're cracked up to be.
Well, Peter made some mistakes. They're documented in this book when he tried to make the Gentiles be circumcised. And Paul come in and corrected him at it. Peter didn't like it. John Mark and Paul had some disputes, and later Paul said, you know, bring John Mark because he's profitable for me from now. Everybody said, well, he finally caught up. I think Paul grew as much as John Mark did. I think they both grew to where they could come back together, because it takes two to get along, don't it?
Yeah.
One can't get along. It takes two.
The sad part of it is that they're fighting for these scriptures to be true.
Yeah.
And it's in the intellect.
It's in the intellect,
and
right?
Fighting, not knowing the spirit. Though.
Yeah, this book, you'll never hear me say throw this thing away. Mm-hmm. You've heard me say this is a plumb bob, it's a square, and it's a level. I won't ever throw it away. It helped me find and hear the Spirit of God. It witnessed what the Spirit was saying in me. But you know, there's a time comes when this isn't the most important thing. The most important thing is what's in here. Can I live the life that I've been talking about for years? Can I love people that are unlovable?
Yeah.
Can I put up with people that you can't stand to be around? Can you love all these people that aren't the select ones in the world? Can you help everybody you can help? You can't help everybody. You got a job to do, and that's all you can do. Jesus didn't help everybody in the world, did he? He only, whatever his father told him to do, keep it in line. Don't overstretch your boundaries. Just do what you're supposed to do within the means he's gave you to do it. That's just common sense.
It's much harder to walk away from opposition and stuff, or to be...
Well, it's easier to fight.
To be kind to them, or you know...
You want to make them mad? Don't fight with them. They want that. See, that's a release. That's a release. If you don't argue with them, you make them worse.
And there's a lot of people who just go around and try to
provoke.
Yep. And make you chain.
Oh, yeah. They're everywhere.
Yeah.
You know what? And I laugh at them.
Yeah. I mean, it's...
It makes it worse.
I understand, but I still laugh at them. I'm not going to fight with them. I laugh at them.
Yeah. Well, what is
The book says laughter does good like a medicine, so I just take my medicine and laugh.
Well, in chapter 12, verse 21, where it says, it's therefore if thine enemy hunger, feed him. If he thirst, give him drink. For in so doing, you keep cold fire of his head.
Yep.
You're making it so he can...
You burn up that thing up here.
Yeah, that carnal thing, so maybe they can hear the truth.
Yeah, that's how you do it. That's how you do it. Just don't fight them. Just don't fight them. Jesus didn't resist. When they came at him and accused everything, he was like a mute lamb.
Yeah.
It's tough. He didn't say everybody could do that, did he? It's for the ones he's chose. And we have to grow up before we can do any of this stuff. Okay, verse 5. Wherefore, you must be in that, have that voluntary attitude of giving in and assuming responsibility and carrying the burden, not only for because of wrath, but also conscience sake. It's for the mind. If I come to this peace in mind, let me tell you something. You can act peaceful in your body, but if your mind ain't at peace, you ain't at peace.
Right.
It's got to be internal first. And the internal controls everything, doesn't it? So if my internal is in turmoil, I can try to hide as much, but eventually it's going to come out. I'm in turmoil. But if my inside is in turmoil, my flesh does not have a choice. It will have to do what the power within you that's in control tells it to do. It's that simple. So you got to get inside peace, and you don't have to worry about anything else. Just be what you are. And he said, my peace I leave unto you. Well, okay, you got peace, but do you believe it? You have to believe you have peace. And peace is not being calm every once in a while. It's being calm regardless of the situation. Just go on. Don't worry about it. Kind of like be anxious for nothing. Kind of like that, yeah. Okay, verse 6. Because... through this, it should say, because through this, and the word cause shouldn't be there, pay ye tribute, and that word tribute is literally taxes. Pay taxes also, because they are God's ministers or servants attending continually to this very thing. So he said, you know, if they got taxes, you pay them taxes because they're doing what I want them to do. It's okay to pay taxes, huh? Oh, we pay all right. Yeah, we pay all right. Over 50% of our income, but that's the way it is.
He still takes care of us.
He still figures out a way to get it here, so not to worry. Through all this stuff going down, it's not really changed a thing in our lives. As far as financially, we still manage to go. It doesn't make any difference. What we got to do, it's there to pay the bills, to pay the light bill, the gas bill, the food, whatever we need, it's there, you know. So why worry? After all these years, after about 60-some years, I'm going to start worrying now? That wouldn't be very smart, would it? Okay. Verse 7 goes on to say, render therefore to all their due, or render all dues. Tribute to whom tribute is due. The word tribute there again is, it's tax. You know, it's tax. Give taxes to whom the taxes are due. Custom or indirect. Now one is taxes and the other is indirect taxes is what it literally says in the Greek language. So the first one, tribute, is taxes to whom taxes due, and custom to whom custom is, but that's an indirect tax. So either the indirect taxes, if they got it coming, give it to them, go on, don't fight it. And then it says fear to whom fear. Actually that's reverence. Give reverence to whom reverence is due. You go in a court of law, you better reverence that man sitting on the bench or he's going to put your butt in jail. You be sarcastic to a judge and see where you go. Because he has the power, doesn't he? Externally. And it says, honor to whom honor is due. Owe no man anything but to love one another. What's the message?
Love.
Love. owe no man anything but to love one another, because he that loves one another, that loves another, has fulfilled the law. You have fulfilled the law, Paul writes, that if you love everybody, you've loved the other people that don't even love you, you've fulfilled the law. How many people do you think can actually say they have fulfilled the law? Because most people say, if you treat me good, I'll treat you good. Just like Peter said to Jesus, Jesus said, do you agape me? And he said, why, phileo you. King James said, he said, love, love, but it's do you love me? And he said, I like you. You're a good friend. And that's the way the world is. If you're a friend, if you treat me good, I'll treat you good. If you treat me bad, watch out, because I'll take you out. Mm-hmm. That's not love.
Just like you said at one point, if you let someone else control you, that's not controlling your spirit. You let your soul rise up and be controlled and,
yeah,
and walk by. It's not by the spirit.
Well, letting someone control your life and thinking for you is dangerous, and I'm not saying that. God doesn't want to do that. He wants us, remember what I said, voluntarily. You know, you do it voluntarily, voluntary service to God. It's not being demanded or else I'm going to hell. It's because first he loved me, he touched me, he brought me in. I'm sorry, I can't help it.
Well,
can't apologize.
If another person comes in your presence, you can immediately see your demeanor change.
They're controlling you. They're getting a hold of you.
Yes.
Yeah. I got this little thing I keep in my wallet. I've had written down for a while. And I read it to my wife just yesterday. I've knocked the cord off so they can probably hear that.
Wake them up.
Huh? Wake them up. There you go. I read this thing, and when I first heard it, it started sticking with me. A wise man makes his own decisions, and an ignorant man or person follows public opinion. See, I don't want everybody to follow me. You follow where God tells you, what he tells you to do. I'm just telling you what he tells me. But most people, especially in a position of authority in a church system or setting or group setting, someone feels like they got to be in control and tell everybody what to do. Right?
I've seen that happen in areas that's not a church setting.
Well, I said in any meeting places or group settings, someone will want to take over and dominate and control it.
I've seen that happen at McDonald's.
Say it ain't so.
They want to
macromanage it. They want to manage everything, you know. And there's people that are just control freaks.
Every little thing you want to control.
Every detail, every bit of it. And that's because they're insecure. Mm-hmm. And they figure if they have the control of it, then everybody will think they're in control. They'll think in there they're okay, but they're not. Okay. Nine now. Because of this, or summed up, it should say, just summed up. No, that's not it. Forget that. Just says, because of this, thou shalt not commit adultery, you shall not kill, you shall not steal, you shall not bear false witness, you shall not covet. If there be any other commandment, it is briefly summed up in this saying, namely, that thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. Okay, so all these things that come from the Ten Commandments, obviously they quoted those ten promises to us, these ten prophecies to us, that he said, when I get through working on your heart and I get you lined up where you were from the beginning, back to where you were, guess what? You won't do any of those things. You won't even have the capacity to do them.
You walk in love, and love doesn't do this.
You can't do it. Love can't do those things. Now, verse 10 says just what you just said. Love works no ill or no evil to his neighbor. Therefore, love fulfills or is the completion of the law. See, and when the law is completed, just like Jesus said, I did not come to destroy the law, but I came to fulfill or to complete the law. Okay? So if we complete the law in our life internally, complete the law by loving, there is no more law, is there? And didn't Paul say that all things are lawful, but everything isn't profitable?
Yeah.
That's all. We have to learn that. There's no more law in our lives. We don't have to worry about that. It ain't there no more. It's only there if I have not loved.
You know, people use that word love very...
generically.
Yes. And one of the things that we were talking in the learning in Romans about, that we must mature and be the mature son now, walk it out, the things that we've learned through these things. And I find myself in settings of, I know that law of love.
Okay.
I find myself in different settings of not trying to look at that person across from me and perceive through that fleshly action that they're doing, but try to see the spirit of God and love that thing, not the fleshly thing that's acting mm-hmm. out in a beastly way or in a soulish way. So in that love, it is something that it's an action.
Love is a verb.
Right. We have to, while that action is working in me, I have to let it come about and work in dealing with the flesh in myself against that person. I don't know if I'm trying to make myself clear here. I'm trying to let that law of love overpower my fleshly thoughts while I'm dealing with the person or persons in front of me.
Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good.
Yeah.
Well,
let me say this. I understand what you're saying. Let me say something a different way, see if you can understand what I'm saying. You don't have to overcome it because it's already been overcome.
Well, I'm watching it in action.
That's a better rendering of it. I'm watching it in action, watching the love that God has overcome in you. These are those things. You don't have to overcome what He has already overcome for you. You see what I'm saying? So when you said it was like you was working, and I know that's not what you meant to say.
I'm as a mature child of God now,
yeah.
I know that law of love.
Right.
I don't just speak it like, have a good day.
You be it.
Yeah. I let that action, which it is an action.
It is a verb, yes.
I sit and watch that action take place.
Mm-hmm.
And all the while, the flesh is still trying to feed me things.
Sure it is.
How could that person be a godly man or a godly woman by the way you're sitting there watching them? But in that, I'm still trying to, the law of the flesh, that perception, still trying to overpower the law of love. I sit and watch that happen.
Absolutely. Have no squabble with that at all.
Well, and the person is too. The other person is too.
You know, if those things still get to you, remember that there's still the things we have to work on. And just how quickly do you stop yourself before you start either, you know,
saying how could they be, or
being rude back to them or
right.
anything? Just like, no, they have something they need, and just love them in spite of themselves.
Well, just like David was sharing. Dave and I talk about homosexuals. People already put them down by watching them and saying they can't be anything godly in them. They're a homosexual.
They're already going down. Yeah.
So that's when you let that law of love, that action, take over that other thought process that's trying to say, how can they be a godly person? Because they're a homosexual.
Yes, but they were talking about that in one of my classes. And I just looked at them and I said, do you really believe that? And I said, okay, that's not your choice of lifestyle, but maybe, you know, if you believe God's in control of all things, maybe think of it this way. Is He teaching you tolerance by just being accepted of everything, whether you approve of their lifestyle or not? But do you really think, if you're sitting there saying you believe God's all love and all forgiving, except for those people?
Well,
how can you I think
that's where I say you're not letting that law of love take action in. You're letting the mm-hmm. the fleshly thoughts,
the judgment,
power, the godly love.
Well, who is to say, and people are good about, you know, putting it, compartmentalizing, well, that's okay, but, or this is this.
It's finally, I just sounds like, and who somebody loves is nobody's business but theirs.
I'm not a proponent of homosexuality, obviously.
That's not your...
It's not my job to condemn them.
Right, but it's not your particular case.
No. What I'm saying is that if someone's a liar, if someone's a thief, if someone has bitterness in their heart, if they have hatred in their heart, what's the difference? If it's not lining up perfectly with the law of God, and that's not the law of Moses we're talking about love. If it's not lining up with that, what's the difference between any of it?
Well, like you go back and you're saying he controls everything.
Mm-hmm.
He's got everybody doing what they're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. And they're doing what they're supposed to do because they're doing...
Positive or negative.
A lesson.
Absolutely.
And our lesson is not to worry about what anybody else does.
That's right.
You know what you are supposed to do, and you love everybody, and you have tolerance for everybody.
And that's
whether
what I'm saying.
It's your choice or not.
If you let that tolerance overpower that law of love that is the Christ in you, mm-hmm. then you're not walking what you're talking.
How many people today, if you presented this problem to them, if you were in Judas Iscariot's shoes today, what would you do? Oh, I wouldn't betray him.
But see, you can't say that because you don't.
Well, no, that's not what I'm even going at. What I'm saying is, yeah, we would if we were in his shoes, because the one that was set there in those shoes was set to, he didn't want to betray him. He had to fulfill Scripture. He had to do what he had to do. Pharaoh had to do, he didn't want to keep the Jews. He said he wanted to let them go, but he said, God said, I'm hardening his heart, so he won't let them go. He put that in them to fulfill his purpose. Do you think God's mad at them because of it? No. They're more obedient than the ones that are supposed to be the good guys. Aren't they? Do you see what I'm saying? I don't have a problem with the negative side. It's not for me. I thank God that I wasn't called on the negative side to be the negative person to do all the negative things. That's all.
Well, but actually, it's all how you perceive, because what you're doing could be negative to other people.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
While I'm sitting there prejudging this person, this other person's sitting there loving me to the fullest max thing that, you know, I'm like, well, who am I to say because your actions are not what I particularly care for?
It's none of my business.
That I'm not going to love you. I'm going to love you less because your actions are not what my flesh really wants to put up with.
Was it any different between homosexuality and straight, or heterosexual and homosexual or lesbian? Is it any difference between black and white?
Well,
it's the same prejudices.
Let's throw the homosexual thing out. Let's say someone that sits and watches CNN all day and they have an angry attitude.
Same thing. It's a judgmental, it's a prejudice toward one thing or another.
Mm-hmm.
And prejudice is a nasty, nasty thing.
Exactly. I mean, and that's the law of love overpowers that.
I agree. You have to not make it overpower, you have to let it overpower.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. As I'm maturing, I am sitting watching that law of love that's in me.
Mm-hmm. Watching it work.
Yeah, that overtakes that other thing.
That's called overcoming.
Well, that's what I'm saying. The mature son and the humility we were talking about.
The voluntary humility.
Yeah, let that other thing die.
What does the book say about grace? What is grace?
That's what I said. Grace is the divine influence into your heart, which reflects down to your lifestyle.
Yeah, what did you say, Lisa?
She's my kitty.
Oh, see, just like Lloyd said, it's the grace, the divine influence in our heart, and reflection that into our lifestyle. That's what we're talking. That is love.
But
that's what I'm writing. That's also
in that thing, like you said, that's a repetitive thing that you're saying.
But are you doing it?
But are you doing it? And it's to me, when I said I let the action rise up, that was the manifestation that came up. I don't have to say what the grace thing is.
No.
I just let that power rain.
Well, but see, you have to sometimes have to hear some things as a witness to understand what's going on. Like Paul said, it's not grievous for me to say these things to you again. It's not grievous to do them multiple times, because sometimes you might hear it the first time, someone else might need 10 times before they hear it.
Well, my thought when you say the grace is, it's Christ manifesting.
Well, but it is basically, but I'm saying just what it literally says so you can understand it. Everybody understands differently. You got to be grace. You got to have grace there too.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. To me, that's just put it simply.
It's God working in you and reflecting out into your lifestyle, so people can see the Christ coming out of you.
Amen. That light, that bright.
Yeah.
If you go, I've been. That's funny. I didn't remember it before, but I was going to bring it in today. But this, I've been reading. I've read this probably 50 times at least.
We're having a discussion today, which I think is good.
Remember the sphere that was many pixels? And God's putting this in there. That's that grace, okay? Mm-hmm. And it's reflecting out. Now, this is that action when you're going into actual life and there's people coming up that's got different opposing things. You got to look beyond that and see where they're coming from. What's God put in them? See the Christ that's in them, however small amounts in there. Yeah, it's what God's put there. I mean,
well, we at one time we didn't have much light on either, did we?
Right.
So it's the same thing I've said for years about, you know, the church world is very good about condemning people. They did the same things, and then when you do it, they condemn you. But no one condemn. Even if someone did condemn them, it don't make it right. You know, so they could go ahead and condemn the next person down the line. If we can't make a mistake, we'll never learn. We'll never change the way we think, will we?
No, and like we said, church, quote, church people, religion.
Yeah.
Learning or whatever. If I'm learning that to not be wanting to vomit when I hear some of the stuff that they say, it's just that's that thing that, you know. I'm sure Jesus, whenever he walked in the places, he was like, oh,
nauseated.
Look, you know, here we go again.
Yeah.
But he tolerated it. And
but he overcame it.
Yes.
With love.
Right. And that's what I said. You know, it's sad sometimes, but they're so sincere in what they're saying, and sometimes
they're sincere, but they're sincerely wrong.
But sometimes they're in a better spot than some of the ones that's high and mighty and think they're better than they are.
Oh, I agree, and the book absolutely says so. He said, "I'd rather have you hot or cold, or I'll vomit you out of my mouth." The in between, the religious playing people. People in the world that don't go to church, don't claim anything, are better people, will treat you more fairly. There's an alarm there somewhere. People in the world, that even the people that say they're atheists, now they usually have a little burr about the church because the church has done something wrong to them, lied to them, mistreated them in some way. The hypocrisy.
They've got stereotypes.
Yeah. But they have issues themselves. But the majority of them will treat you better as a person than the church world will.
Yeah.
Because they don't feel superior to you. They're just another person going through life trying to do the best they can. Yeah. The church world has this elevated view, you know, and they don't read their book that said if you elevate yourself, he'll abase you.
Yeah.
If you abase yourself, he'll elevate you in due time. See, they got everything backwards, and they're always, everybody's in a hurry to get to the top of the mountain. But you know what? That's not our call. It says he places us in the body where he chooses. It's not about what we do or how hard we work. We're just about to be an obedient.
I think
it comes down to your intent. I mean, what is your real intent on when you do stuff? Is it?
Yeah. Is there a motive to get something out of it? Or
something you want to be noticed? You want to get somewhere, or because you truly doing it because you think it's the right thing? Right.
There you go. That's a very good point. If it's anything other than it's the right thing to do, you're not going to get anything out of it anyway.
Well, that's still seeking to be God.
Be God. Mm-hmm. Well, you could be. You'll get something out of it. It probably won't be what you want.
Those ones that, you know, where they think they need to go minister in foreign countries, and then they end up getting, you know, thrown in jail. Whatever.
Yeah.
It's like,
I got a friend right over now in town, and I see over in the mornings, and he's 90 years old, and his kids are, he got one of them that's a minister in another country, and he stole money off of his own father. He's been locked up in jail, and he said, and this man says, "You got no business being over in the first place." He said, "I bailed you out, you promised to pay me, you've took so much money off me, I can't even keep track of it anymore." He said, "I'm done. If you get locked up now, you're going to stay in them jails. I'm through with you." You know, and now this man has a little bit of an attitude too, but still I understand. The others think just because they say they're missionaries that everybody owes them something. Yeah, I don't see any people in here doing missionary. When the Apostle Paul went on a missionary journey, did you see him having a bake sale or a cookie sale or a rummage sale or fundraisers of any kind?
No, he told them when they walked to.
He said, "Don't take nothing but the clothes on your back, and God will provide for you." They've twisted everything. It's all become a big business. Sickening, but that's the way it is. It's become that mustard seed grown into that big tree. Yeah. That's the way it is. He already told us what was going to happen. I have no issue with it because he said it was going to happen because he knew what was going to happen. So let it go. If he didn't want that big tree, he'd send somebody to chop it down, wouldn't he?
Isn't the spirit in us, the sphere, isn't that our shield, our refuge?
It's everything.
And nothing can enter or exit that but love. And the fruit of the Spirit, all the nine ingredients, it's got one flavor.
It's love.
You know, it's love, peace, love, joy, love, you know, all these things.
Mm-hmm.
It's love. So you can, that should overcome any difficulties.
Wouldn't it be the whole armor of God?
Yeah.
In one thing, love.
It shields you so that any of these accusations.
Yeah.
Christ, you're inside that sphere. That's you're in Christ.
Mm-hmm.
You're in the Spirit. You're not in that flesh and mind. It ain't gonna have any effect on. It will have effect on your flesh.
Oh yeah.
It has to die anyways. It has to be. God is a consuming fire. It consumes the flesh through thinking.
Flesh was designed to die.
Mm-hmm.
It's designed that way. From your own thinking process, right.
And if you tear your own self down, it doesn't matter how much you think you have for everybody else. You can't give any of it if you don't love yourself first.
Right.
It's got to start here. It's got to start here. Everything. He even talks about, it all starts where? At the house of God. And that's the house of God. Right here inside of us. So if we don't love ourselves, we ain't going to love anybody else anyway. We're only playing the game that way. That's religion. If you can't accept yourself and what God has made you and how He's made you, as unique as you are, if you can't accept that, then you can't accept anybody else. That's just the way it is.
Well, that's why the church turns all their focus towards Jesus and take it off of yourself.
You what?
They turn their focus on Jesus only.
Well, that's exactly right. They're saying, look over there. That's what religion does. That's why it's all external. It's always pointing somewhere else, so no one will look at them. And, you know, even the children know that very quickly when someone's playing a game or not. You know, the kids are sharper than people give them credit for. What did I leave off with? 11? Okay. And that knowing the time, that it should say, even now, it is high time to wake out of sleep. So what's Paul saying about the condition of humanity? We're walking around slumbering, you know.
Zombies walking.
Because now our deliverance is nearer than when we believed. So he's saying when we started, look what he said. They're asleep. He said, your deliverance is nearer now than when you believed. So he's saying, when you first believed what God was talking to you, to now there's a change. Something's changing, isn't it? Your deliverance is coming closer and closer. It is a progressive walk, isn't it? And that's what he's saying. It's a progressive walk. Realize that when you started, first thing we were told, oh, you're saved and going to heaven and everything's taken care of. We find out somebody's lying to us. We got a journey ahead of us. And they didn't tell us those things, did they? Paul's telling you there is a journey. He said, the night is far spent. What is a night? It's a time of ignorance, a time of darkness. It's far spent. That means the darkness time is about over. The day or the time of enlightening is at hand. Let us therefore cast off the works of darkness or ignorance, and let us put on the armor of light. And what might that be? The armor of light. How about John 1:9? See what it says. If I can get there through these pages. John 1, I'm almost there. John 1, verse 9. Actually a couple of verses there. It said, there was a man sent from God, verse 6, whose name was John. The same came for a witness to bear witness, of the light, that all men through him believe. He was not the light, but was sent to bear witness of that light. That was the true light, which lights every man that comes into the world. He is in the world, and the world was made by him, and the world knew him not. But anyway, it's talking about Christ. Okay? He came into humanity, and they didn't even know him. Guess what? They still don't know him. He's in them, and they don't know him. And Ephesians 6, let me go there real quick. Huh? Yeah. I think 6:11 through 17 or something like that. Okay, 11. Put on the whole armor of God, which is love, that you may be able to stand the wiles of the devil. Of course, what they think the devil is, that cat with the pitchfork and the sharp tail and the red suit, but he's right up there between their ears. Huh? Oh, is that what it was? Oh, shoot, I never knew. I didn't even knew that. It says, because we wrestle not against flesh and blood. Right there, he's telling you that. Comes right back and tells you it's not about flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers in the darkness, that's ignorance, of the world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. The highest place in me is right here, in my mind. Wherefore, take to you the whole armor of God, that you may... Take the word may out of there, because it shouldn't be there. That you be able to withstand the evil day, and have done all to stand. When you've done all, just stand. Stand therefore, having your loins girt about with truth. Truth. If you got the truth, what else do you need now? It's going to take care of everything else. That's the first thing mentioned, truth. And having the breastplate of righteousness, your feet shod with the preparation of the gospel of peace. Above all, taking the shield of faith, where you are able to quench all the fiery darts of the wicked. See, that shield of faith. When I believe what God says, not what someone said he said, or some King James version or any other version, but when I believe what God has said in me, when I believe that, I am able to quench all those fiery darts from the wicked one. Guess where that wicked one is? There it is. It's what that thought comes out of my head. And take the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit, which is the Word of God, praying always with all prayer, supplication, the Spirit, watching therefore with all perseverance and supplication for all the saints. It's all about the truth of God and the love of God. If God is love and God is truth, is there a difference?
He is. I am.
He is. He is, and I am. And when every time I see I am in the Bible, I in my mind, I hear something different. Whenever someone says I am, I hear God is. I mean, that's just the words I hear, God is. I am as God is. Whatever it is that you need, that's what he is. That's just something in me I hear when I see it and read it.
I am,
huh?
I am is his name.
Yep. I am that I am. But whatever you need, that's what I am. See, that's what he's saying to you. I am whatever you need. What I leave off with there? 12?
13.
Starting with 13, right?
Yeah.
Let us walk honestly in the day, that's in the light. So he says, honestly in the day. What's he saying? To only walk in the daytime?
No.
He's saying, walk in the understanding. See, with the enlightened mind. Whatever you do, do it. And walking is not literally walking, but it's your lifestyle. However you live your lifestyle, do it with illumination with God. With God illuminating whatever you're doing. Not in rioting and drunkenness, nor in chambering. What's chambering mean?
Mindset.
Huh?
Adultery.
It's adultery, yeah. Not in adultery and wantonness, which is unbridled lust. Not in strife and not in envyings, which is jealousy. Jealousy started the whole thing with Cain and Abel, didn't it? Brought it to murder. But put you on the Lord Jesus Christ and make no provision for the flesh to fulfill the lusts thereof. He said, don't make a provision. In other words, he's saying, if you don't give the ground to those thought processes in your mind, they can't grow. There's a passage in Psalms, I think it's 137, if I'm not right. If I'm not right, you can correct me if you find it and see. But it's about the Babylonians. And he said, David said, blessed is he that takes the little ones and dashes their heads against a stone. Well, if I take a little Babylonian baby and bash his head against a stone, I don't have to worry about warring with that when he becomes a great big warrior, do I? And it's only an analogy, it's only a symbolism of the thought processes in her head. The Babylonian, Babylon speaks of religious confusion. So if I take these thought processes and get them out of my head when they're little thoughts, before they've been rooted and grounded in my and psyche into where I believe that stuff over the Word of God, guess what? I'm in trouble if I don't get them out of there early, aren't I? And that's what you have to do when you deal with people that's been in church all their lives and then you try to tell them someone lied to you. They won't believe it. They won't believe it. Lois sent me a picture off of Facebook here just recently and it had two pictures of people sitting behind a booth, like sitting a little thing like where I'm sitting right here with a sign over top of it. And one said, the brutal truth. And the other one said, comforting lies. And there was a man at each booth and there was nobody in front of the man with the brutal truth. But guess what? The comforting lies had a line clear out of sight. I mean, that's the way it is. They would rather be lied to because it's comfortable than hear the truth that would make them get out of their comfort zone.
It's tickling their ears.
It's tickling their ears. I mean, you can say it a lot of different ways, but that's the human nature.
Another natural way is like what you think and what you focus on, that's what you attract. You
know? Yep. You become, it's your God, whatever you put all your time, talent, and treasure on.
To believe, you know, all the nonsense and negative things and what's wrong, what's missing, you never really get to see all that you really have.
I was sharing with some people this last few weeks, and I said, you know, all everybody wants to do is look at what's different. Why don't we try to find something together? Why can't we agree on something? You know, instead of finding out, well, you don't believe this and I don't believe that. Why don't we find something we do agree on? There might be something if we try.
Well,
but it takes two to do that.
Generic.
Huh?
You believe in something.
Yeah.
That's all. Don't have to go any further than that.
Yeah.
We both believe in something.
Yeah.
We have something in common.
Yeah, we believe, but see, they won't buy that. I mean, I'm just telling you, that group of people won't buy it. They have to have something they can see. And I understand that's difficult to deal with them, but I'm not backing up on it. I'll just be there as long as I got to be there.